Hey, you're listening to Abby B and Abby C on Burst. We are now joined in the studio by the most widely acclaimed R&B DJ within the music industry, with an MBE already under his belt at the tender age of 37 and voted best DJ in the Mobo Awards whilst mingling with the top divas of R&B. Of course, it can only be the one and only Trevor Nelson.
Oh, I didn't know who you were talking about.
Thanks for joining us, Trevor.
That's not a problem at all. My pleasure.
And you'd think we'd be happy with just Trevor, but no, we also have his producer, Devon Daly, talking to us.
Hey.
Thanks, Devon.
How are you doing? No problem.
We're proud to welcome you both to Burst. How's the journey down here?
I came up from Plymouth. I had a gig in Plymouth last night, and it's the first time I've been to Plymouth, so it was a very picturesque journey. It was lovely.
Have you been to Bournemouth before?
Yeah, loads. I've been coming to Bournemouth for about 10 years, DJing on and off.
Cool.
I was actually DJing in Bournemouth before most of you guys ever heard of me, so
okay.
It's a nice place for me.
But this is my first visit to Bournemouth.
Oh, is it, Devon?
It is.
And do you like Bournemouth?
From what I've seen, journey from the train station to here.
And what is it you've seen, Dev?
Well, I'm going on what the taxi driver told me, actually.
What did he tell you?
All good things.
Excellent.
What a good nightlife.
It's good in Bournemouth. Yeah, it's great. It's one of the uni towns. I mean, I'd say there's Leeds, Bournemouth,
yeah.
Two of my favourites, and possibly at Newcastle or something like that, and Dublin, in terms of going to uni. So I know anyone who studies in Bournemouth is a bit of a party person.
Okay, firstly, Trevor, I have to ask, is it true that you hate being called Trev?
No, I don't know where you got that from. No, who said that?
One of my friends, I was talking to him about you, and he said, do not call him Trev.
No, not at all. No. Not at all. I mean, I think that when you do what I do for a living, people don't come up to you and say Mr. Nelson. I'd rather that than Mr. Nelson, you know. And people call you by your first name because they connect with you somehow. And if they abbreviate it, even better. But if someone, obviously, taking a piss, it's like, what, Trev? You know, that's completely different. Maybe he came up to me like that. I'm sure if you came up to me and said, hi, Trev, I'd be like, hi, Abby.
Okay.
There you go. So it's not a big deal.
Okay.
I might call you Abs.
I like that's Abs. Cool. I like Abs.
Yeah.
Okay, can you tell us, Trevor, you've had an absolutely amazing career so far with just too many highlights to mention. Did you ever think back in 1982 when you started out that you'd be such a prestigious DJ as you are today?
Do you know, 1982, I think that was my school disco.
I was born then.
I think that's when I started out. No, I mean, just for the record, I DJed purely because I was so nervous of asking girls to dance that I thought the safest place to be was in the DJ booth, and that's the first gig I ever did. So I didn't plan to be a DJ. I really didn't. It was like most people who DJ, it's probably just a hobby and pastime and keep me out of trouble like anybody else. And just, I love music. So to get paid, I wouldn't have to be doing what I'm doing to be happy. I could quite easily be in Devon's position producing, or I just want some working around music.
Yeah.
It makes me happy. It makes you getting up much easier in the day than working on a building site, don't you think?
So was it purely your love of music that drove you into the industry?
Totally. There was no money. I mean, it wasn't money. I was very suspicious of major record labels. I resisted working for any until a few years ago when I worked for EMI. Because, I just wanted to keep what I love pure, you know. I didn't want to... The same reason I wouldn't sing or wouldn't even try and produce. People say, what, have you tried producing? I said, come on, man, when your favourite artist is Stevie Wonder, how can you even dare to go in the studio and think you can do that, you know? So, I hold music up on a pedestal, totally, and people who can do it, even higher, really.
Brilliant.
Okay, I mean, guys, we touched on it a little bit earlier, actually, about pirate radio and stuff. I mean, does it still have a place in the industry, do you think?
I'd say so, yeah. I mean, I did a little pirate myself. I didn't say downstairs, but partly pirate helps you to learn what it is that you're really good at and concentrate on. And having done pirate for about 18 months, I realised that I wanted to be able to make a difference with the programme, not just on air, but crafting which features we put in and who would actually get interviewed. So that led me into production as well.
It's quite a community spirit, isn't there, with pirate radio? I mean, again, what's your sort of like...
That's a rumour.
I think a lot of
those hardcore underground pirate stations use that as an excuse to exist. A pirate radio station, when you say community, when we were on KISS, it wasn't so much about the area of London we were broadcasting from. It was about the people that were listening to our station from wherever. It was the music community, not the local community. Yeah. We didn't give two hoots about the local community because we were scared of getting caught by the local community. So we cared about who was zoning into what we were playing. You know what I mean? That was more important. It was a musical community. And the same way, if you go to a club that's quite underground, you won't get everybody from, you know, 1 mile radius going to that club. People will come from out of town. You know, they don't tell people about it. They just come and check for it. It's the same as Pirate. Pirate is the best place to dry test or road test your skills as a broadcaster. If you go in there and mess about and just say, oh, my mobile phone's ringing off the hook, man, yeah, you're wasting a great opportunity because it's a chance. Honestly, it's a chance to... I took my Pirate Radio show very seriously. I actually did more research for my Pirate Radio show than I do for my Radio 1 show. I used to do half-hour profiles on artists, you know, like a nerd would, you know. But, you know, it stood me in good stead because whereas I saw guys just treating it like, hey, you know, I've just woken up, drag me boxing, let me see what I'm going to play. I wasn't like that. I was really... Because for everyone listening, it was special to me. You know, it was because I never thought I'd be on any form of radio. So I think a lot of kids waste their opportunities on Pirate. But it is relevant.
And it's interesting, Trevor, talking about researching, because I've still got sheets at home of shows that I did on Pirate Radio from 1990-something. Track listed June 1992 or whatever. And the cassettes. Because I think when you're interested in something, you want to be thorough. Mm. You know, when you want to study and get your exam, you have to revise.
Yeah.
People seem to think that just because you like music, it's easy. One of the hardest things to do is to be able to slot records together that make sense. Not just about playing any two records. And that's where the differences distinguish them between people who know their music and people who can actually select their music.
Okay, there's a great deal more potential for younger people now who want to follow in your footsteps thanks to things like BBC Talent and also courses like ours, Radio Production. How do you feel about that?
Proud, really proud, because... you know, I think that I don't take, you know, you said I've had an amazing career. I don't look back at all, unless I'm asked. You know, I'm not one of these people reminiscing all day. Oh, look what I've done this and that. Until I stop doing what I'm doing, then I might look back because I'm afraid of it all going. You know, I mean, it's like when your time comes, it comes. But I certainly didn't think I'd have a career I had. Now, if you're 18 now, you look up and you can see people like myself or, you know, people you can relate to. Oh, he did all that. There's a job in that. There's an actual career in that, you know. I'm not saying it wasn't a career before, but the way people felt before was you had to be that smashy, nicey type of larger than life, I want to do Saturday night TV on BBC One and ITV, you know, kind of person. You can be quite introvert and be very successful, as John Peel proved, you know. And I think it's the opportunities now, the fact you guys have got a course at uni, man. Jesus, if there was this course at uni when I was 18, my dad would be so proud of me. My son went to university, you know? You know what I mean? Because I didn't go uni. There was nothing dragging me or, you know, pulling me towards uni from Hackney, you know? But I know that this is exactly why people like myself and I suppose Devon and everybody in radio is proud that there is stuff like this going on because, you know, you guys are the future of broadcasting, whether you like it or not.
We are.
And no, but it's great to have an opportunity. I mean, you know, when you know what you're doing here, you know, at this stage of my life, I was doing Pirate Radio with equipment that, you know what I mean, is embarrassing. Do you know what I mean?
That was the first thing we did when we came in. We both had a look at the equipment.
Impressed always with when I see setups. I always walk in and I'm like, you can make proper radio shows here. Yeah. You know, you can do everything you need. You can have the Prime Minister sitting at this table. You could be there. You could be there. You know, you could be the Home Secretary here. You know, you could be having a political debate. This is the sort of skills you need now. It's great.
Because when we started, we were able to do gigs on one turntable and one microphone. That's the difference.
It sounds like it's 1933, doesn't it? I mean.
No, but I'm using that analogy because
not that old, Deb.
I want you to understand that the technical equipment you take for granted now, which you will take for granted because you've never seen anything else, is light years from what people had before, who are now in the business working with the same equipment you guys are using.
Also, I will say something for the record. People always say to me, what do you like doing the most? Because you do all these different things. And I will say radio. Because, you know, if you want to get into broadcasting, you don't start with TV, you don't start with the obvious things. You know, radio is still, and it's the oldest form of broadcasting, it's still the best and most intimate form of broadcasting. You know, you're not judged on what you look like, you're not judged on... You know, you're just judged on your ability to communicate what you're talking about or what you're playing with some one person listening at home or in a car or whatever, and it's a proper career. It really is. You can take you to any country in the world. It can, you know, it's a skill. Whereas if you do TV, you have this burnout. You know, you have this 3-year kind of. But oh, she was hot yesterday. She's yesterday's news. But with radio, you're taken more seriously. And if you do want to get into TV, it's a good starting point. But if I had to do it all over again, I'd be totally prepared to be behind the scenes. Totally. I actually think I'm a good producer. But I've never had a chance to produce.
Take over Devon.
I'd love to. I'd love to switch roles. A shame. I like radio a lot. I really, really. Radio is my true love. And I think I'll be doing radio till I'm 60 at least. I still think I'll do it. I think that when people like you and you're a broadcaster, you've really got a chance of a long career. Hmm. You know, especially if people like your voice and they're comfortable with you or whatever. You know. So I'm definitely in it to win it.
And actually, that nicely leads on to my next question. Devon, I mean, what makes a good producer? And, you know, how important is the relationship between DJ and producer?
Interesting you ask the question, what makes a good producer? Because I think it depends who you're working with. Some people like complete hands-on, tell you everything. Other people like you to be a bit more relaxed, stand back now and again, throw something into the mix. And I think as people, you have to find out what you're comfortable with, who you're working with, and say, right, Trevor's the sort of person, if I like a record, I'll give it him in 1 week and he doesn't like it or doesn't play it, I don't think, oh, he doesn't think I've got taste. I just think, all right, this week he's going to Rome, he's coming here to Bournemouth, then he's going to be getting on a plane going goodness knows where else. So he's actually not got much time maybe. So when he listened to it, he probably thought, sure, not sure about that record, I'll play it again 2 weeks' time. That's the sort of thing you learn about somebody when you work with them.
You don't get offended.
There you go.
He did get offended first, though. I could see it.
Yeah, but you see, that's because you're getting to know somebody and you're not sure how to present something to them.
Is he difficult to work with?
No, he's actually one of the easiest people to work with because he's completely as you see him. Whether you see him on MTV, whether you see him at Radio 1, that's how he is. You know?
Joker.
And if you want to say something, you can say it. You don't have to think...
Yeah, there is a... I'll be honest with you, I've had, like I said, downstairs... I mean, Dev produces my favourite show, which is... it's all about the music. What I do on Saturday is fun on Radio 1. It's, I have a different producer. He's got more of a daytime head on him, in a sense. You know what I mean? We would do a feature called Happy Shopper.
I heard that on Saturday.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Things like that for a daytime audience. Yeah. You know, and I think Dev is doing his dream show. Almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you said to Devon, what kind of show would you like doing radio and produce? Oh, I know you're not going to let me, but a soulful show. You know what I mean? But it's important for him to do other shows as well. It's important for me to work with different producers. And I've had different relationships with different producers. Some of them, like Caroline, who was downstairs, my first one, was quite a stickler. You know, over my shoulder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We had a really good relationship. We still have a great relationship. It's a different way of producing someone. And you can get, you know, notoriously, you can have real ego wars with your producer, because before Devon came, for example, I already had a name as R&B tastemaker at Radio 1. So if he comes along and he's my new producer and he says, well, you may be Mr. R&B, but I've got a couple of tunes that I think you should be playing. And I'm looking at him like, piss off. You know who I am? No. But you know what I mean? He may get that feeling and you can have, it's really difficult. So, but at the same time, the one negative about really getting on with someone, I really get on with Dev, is that we sometimes be playing records and we're having such a chat off air that the record might run out. We're like, yeah, Dev, so, you know, you're coming out tonight, man. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the records run out and it's really unprofessional. And it's really hard sometimes for us to, you know, it's true. So sometimes the producer you have a very sort of colder relationship with works better, and sometimes it doesn't. It's different strokes.
And then when you have a broadcast assistant who also gets on very well with you, I mean, the three of us on the show before.
Yeah, Darren.
We used to have these Sunday night discussions.
About women.
where we put the world to rights, relationships, everything. It was like Kilroy meets Oprah, mate, meets Trisha. Unreal.
And records in between.
It was just, if we could have recorded that, we reckon we'd have sold bucket loads of those records and
Darren's
CDs.
Darren's laughing
behind me. Oh, is it? Yeah, no, we used to, it was therapeutic, man. But no, but it's the fun of doing radio, you know? It's fun of doing radio. If you can get away with that on a national station.
But people did used to say it sounded like fun when they heard the banter. Because one of the things that we do different to a lot of shows. A lot of shows have the whole team on the mic. And I think that can crowd the DJ. Because at the end of the day, it's the Trevor Nelson show. But people know that there's a team, and they like to hear something from the team, even if it's
a diss. Even if it's a diss.
From, you know, the back corner. Yeah,
to be honest, I'm pretty bad, because I will, you know, you have to be prepared when you're at someone like Radio 1, you know, depending on the DJ. If the sort of DJ likes to bring the crew in because he's short of a word to say or something, or he's forgotten what he's going to go, he's going, "Ain't that right, Dazzler?" And then Dazzler goes, "Yeah!" And, you know, and he doesn't mean it at all. He's just picking his nose, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." Or he might, he, you know, he might want to say something. I might be rude to him just for a laugh. And, you know, you've got to be able to take that because sometimes it's, you know.
The amount of times that people said, "I heard Trevor say that about you last Saturday when I went to go and DJ later that night," it's amazing how much people remember, especially if it's something that's funny or quirky. You know, they don't remember the really brilliant point that you went from the interview to the news. They're not interested in that bit.
No, the people listen to radio, and I'll give you one word of advice. You'll only be remembered for your really bad mistakes, like dead air or something you've done wrong, because the actual most people listen to radio, listen to it, it's just background. We always believe as broadcasters that everyone's listening, hanging on to your every word. They're not. They're just, especially if it's a music show, they're just listening and that. And when you say something, like if you swear, for example, it's like, "Oh, I heard that." You know, it's really funny how people only pick up on things that are either controversial or mistakes or errors.
Which is why the Liam Gallagher interview is infamous in Radio Land on Steve Lamacq's show, because he swore and said things about people that people still remember 10 years after the interview. So if you want to get famous,
that's
we know
to
what
do
to do.
Yeah, that's it.
As your career has developed, do you think that radio at the same time has continually progressed into a stronger medium?
Actually, radio's done remarkably well to survive, you know, what's going on. I think about around the Matthew Bannister era when he axed a lot of DJs. I think that the media in general thought that radio was going to become obsolete almost.
Yeah.
You know, especially someone like Radio 1, because there's so many local stations all over the country competing with us. You know, the audience figures weren't incredible. But for some reason, it became rock and roll again a bit. I think a lot of that is due to Chris Evans. Around that time, Chris Evans and Zoe Ball came in. Then we had Bolton's Sarah Cox. Yeah. And then we've got the loudmouth himself, Chris Moyles. You know, the saviour of Radio 1. And, you know, and then you had a thing where a lot of TV presenters were migrating to radio.
Yeah.
We had Jamie Featherston on, you know, we've got Vernon Kay on now. We've got them all wanting to do radio because they see it as really cool and a part of their kind of portfolio in some way, you know what I mean? So radio has survived. Radio 1 will always survive because we champion bands and new bands more than local radio. And bands, you will notice, bands love Radio 1 more than they love local radio. Local radio only play them when they've had hits and hits. We play them, we're a bit more gutsy, we'll play them and stick our necks out for them.
And finally, one more question, guys, because I'm giving the 1-2 over there. Who's going to be big for 2005? I know it's quite a hard question, but
I'm going to answer that first. His version of big, right, and my version of big are two completely different things.
We have a great theory here. So
but no, I think that it's difficult now. I'll answer this quickly, but I've got to explain that 5 years ago, I could tell you who'd be big next year because I'd have a tape cassette in my house of their album, which is coming out in 4 months' time. But they don't do that anymore because of bootlegging, because of downloading, you know, so you don't get artists, you know, exposing their music. They wrap them up now and they unleash it all at the same time. So you get a new artist, that person like 50 Cent was unleashed on everybody at the same time. In the club was just unleashed and the video came out and, you know, the image came out, the story came out and the marketing came out. Now you've got a situation where record companies don't want to tell you what's going on yet. They don't want you to get on it too quickly because they want to time it all right. So I tend to look, on the UK side, there isn't anybody I can say is going to blow up. But in America, there's a girl called Ciara. She's got a track called Goody. She's only 18. And I think she could be big next year. And there are several Soul Nation style artists, the more pure artists. Like, we like a girl called Teedra Moses a lot, but I don't think she'll be a star. But I want to say she's going to be big because we love her. But I doubt she'll be a star. So, but I'll put my money on the girl called Ciara.
We'll listen out for her.
Excellent.
Do.
Devin?
I think there's a chance for a young girl called Jasmine Sullivan, who has got a deal with the Jive label, same label that R. Kelly's on. She's got Missy Elliott in her camp as well. I think she could be if you're a betting person, get down the bookie and put an each way bet on that one.
Hey, just spend 10 pence, mate.
Because we've got a theory that if I like it, it won't make any sales. But it will be loved by the connoisseurs.
Oh, very nice. What a nice note to end on. Cool. Well, thank you very much, Trevor Nelson.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much, David Daly.
I have to compliment the bed accompanying the interview.
Tom's work.
Like a copy of that to take back.
Yeah, Tommy hasn't made me a bed like that.
It's very nice.
He thought that was very cool.
Yeah, I like that.
Do you mind me hijacking your bed for my radio show?
Go for it.
I'm serious. You will hear me playing it on a Wednesday night on a regular basis.
Very good.
No, thank you very much, guys. We really appreciate you taking the time out. And good luck for tonight.
I'd be cool.
We'll be there.
In fact, tonight, can I just say about tonight?
Of course.
Before we do it. Tonight, I don't know how I'm going to play it tonight. Normally it's all hands in the air stuff, but because it's Soul Nation, it's going to be very melodic. And I think it's going to be half a show and half a club night. You know, I might do a lot of talking, which is unusual, really, when you're doing a club night, but I might actually drop it like a show. And the music in the background here has made me very, very aware of that's maybe the way I should do it. So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Bournemouth. We're live all across the world. And, hey, no one's got their hand in the air. No one's clapping. We're just going to play some good music. Thank you. Radio 1 hate me for that.
Well, we'll be there, so we'll be listening.
We will.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers, right,
thanks, guys.
Good luck, guys.